The word innovation is tossed around quite a bit in agriculture. I'm definitely guilty of overusing it myself, but what does it actually mean? Well, there's probably no person better to dig into this question, at least in agriculture, than Bex Hybrid's Director of Innovation, Brad Fruth.
Ideas are cheap. Motivated people that are passionate about their ideas is what is lacking.
Bex Hybrids is the largest family-owned retail seed company and the third largest seed brand in the country. But it's Brad's views on innovation and adding value to customers that really stand out to me in today's episode.
Focus on what we're good at, which is seed and the selection of seed, the placement and management of it, but then partner with best in breed on everything else.
Today, Brad shares some of the specific ways Bex Hybrids adds value to their farmer customers, and he shares openly and candidly his views on the current state of ag technology.
If you don't have a good value prop and you're not delivering value, then this is just the inevitable, right? And so the industry probably needs a little bit of belt tightening to make sure that you are delivering direct farm value and you're just not blowing smoke.
Brad Fruth of Bex Hybrids sits down with guest host Rishi Pete on today's Future of Agriculture podcast. Hello, fellow ag nerd. Thank you so much for joining me. My name is Tim Hamrich, and every week you and I get to hear from the farmers, founders, innovators, investors, the people shaping the future of the ag industry. And before we dive into today's episode with Brad Fruth, I'd like to take just a moment to recognize our quarterly presenting sponsor, which this quarter is Headstorm, engineering growth for the farms of tomorrow. Headstorm is a full-service technology consultancy with been there, done that knowledge and expertise in the ag industry. The team at Headstorm knows which digital strategies work and which ones don't work based on the competitive landscape across broadacre, specialty, and animal ag industries. Headstorm provides a holistic and actionable technology roadmap that bridges the gap between strategy and implementation. From inception to execution, they help you play to your strengths, mitigate your weaknesses, and make technology your unfair advantage. Learn more about Headstorm at headstorm.com, just headstorm.com. I'll leave a link for it in the show notes, and thank you very much to Headstorm for supporting Ag Innovation and the Future of Agriculture podcast. All right, now back to today's featured conversation with Brad Fruth, who is the Director of Innovation at Bex Hybrids. There are a number of different things that make Bex unique, one of which you can see right there in Brad's career. He started at the company as an intern and now has worked there for about 20 years. Over that time, he's been dedicated to converging IT, data, and agriculture into real solutions for farmer customers. This background really gives Brad a perspective that I think you're going to enjoy because it's both technical and relatable, and it's always focused on what makes a meaningful impact at the farm level. Today's interview was put together by our guest host, Rishi Pete. This is now the third episode Rishi has brought to the program after Verdant Robotics in 391 and Lavoro Agro in 404. As many of you know, Rishi writes the very popular newsletter Software is Feeding the World. If for some reason you are not subscribed to that, you're definitely going to want to do so. I'll make it easy for you by including a link to it in the show notes. But Rishi, thank you so much for coming back to host another episode of the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. This was a fun one, just like the previous one. So I once again want to thank you for giving me a chance to guest host on this amazing podcast.
Well, the pleasure is definitely all mine. You always ask great questions, and it's extremely valuable for me to be able to tap into your network and to your expertise to bring fresh content onto the show here. And speaking of which, let's get into today's episode. So what was it that prompted you to want to reach out to Brad to see if he'd come on the show?
Yeah, I think a couple of reasons. So first reason is that when we talk about the structure of the agriculture industry, we always talk about how it is heavily concentrated, and which is true. There are a few seed companies, there are a few chemical companies which have majority of the market share, but then there are a lot of other independent companies which provide similar products coupled with a bunch of different value-added services. And at least to me, I feel we don't talk about them enough. And Beck's Hybrid, in that sense, is very interesting. I didn't know that they were the third largest, the fourth largest seed company in the US for certain crop types. And so I was very curious as to how does an independent family-owned business become so big and what are they doing to achieve those results? I think that was the main reason. The other reason is Brad is just an interesting character. He likes to engage with the industry, with farmers, with technology companies. So he's someone I often go back to get a more holistic perspective. A lot of people have very deep perspectives, but sometimes it only comes from a particular angle. Brad is someone who I feel has a broader perspective by looking at different issues. So those are some of the main reasons I felt Brad could become a good, interesting guest for your audience, Tim.
Yeah, he really is. And that's what stood out to me as well as I listened to this about Brad is a lot of times people will ask me, you know, why do you get so many entrepreneurs on the show? And why don't you get more of kind of the corporate executives that have such an impact on the broader industry? And the simple answer is because the entrepreneurs are exponentially more likely to speak freely and boldly and talk about their vision for the future of agriculture than someone who has to worry about corporate communications and things like that. But with Brad, we really kind of get the best of both worlds here, which is a treat. So without further ado, here it is. Here is Rishi's interview with Beck's Hybrids Director of Innovation, Brad Fruth.
One of the things that when I took this role that I didn't want is that I had seen some companies that had like innovation centers and like they talked about, hey, I'm going to put you in a room. Let's get some IKEA furniture, you know, some funky chairs and then magical unicorn ideas come blowing out the other end. And so I've grown up here at Beck's. I started here as an intern. It's the only place I've ever worked. And I was like, I don't want to work for a company that does it that way. You know, and our management has assured me, no, that's not what we want. Being a dedicated resource in innovation, though, I'm always thinking about how can I replicate myself? Or as Jim Schwartz, our director of research, you know, says, how can we make force multipliers out of one another? So we do some work in internal programming. You know, we have taught how do you run a design sprint with your team? How do you not have groupthink? And how do we get rid of brainstorming? We just actually ran some curriculum on a test trial of, you know, a 16 panel discovery workshop, like you were going to run your project as an individual startup, teaching things about understanding jobs to be done. What problem are you solving? What's your pricing mechanism? How are you going to market? Like those skill sets should not happen within the innovation. If I'm doing my job right, there are new products being released. There's new partnerships that are being announced by my peers and my department managers, and I'm in the back cheering them on. That to me is success. That's what we should be breeding within our culture. So everybody from the guy who's out here loading trucks to our product people, to our practical farm research, to the guy that's scouting fields in production, all the way up to our director of sales should all have this tool set. And again, we should be replicating that. That should not happen within a silo within one group.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. But where do most of your ideas come from? You talked about startups is one source, and I'm sure your employees are a big source of that. Could you talk about that process a little bit?
Yeah. So I've gotten to the point where I think I've learned, and most people in these roles have learned, that ideas are cheap. Motivated people that are passionate about their ideas is what is lacking. And so if I have somebody that comes into my office and said, hey, Brad, I got a great idea. Bex needs to get into, I don't know, let's say like Christmas trees, okay? Well, if you're not willing to quit your job right now and run the Beck's Christmas tree farm, then the answer is no, I don't want to work with you. Now, I try to make it as like nice as I can in that, but the whole point is that like if you are not so passionate about that idea, then it's not going to work. I think a lot of us in this space see it in founders, right? You can tell in about 60 seconds if somebody is passionate about what they're doing, or they're just trying to make a quick buck and they're trying to see what they can do. At Beck's Hybrids, a lot of us are passionate about what we do. We're passionate about the customer that we serve. And I don't need any more ideas. I need passionate people that are ready to take that dream and make it a reality. Because there's going to be ups and downs. I mean, there's been a lot of ink shed on this topic, right? So it comes down to be passionate. Now, to answer your question directly, one of the things that I've also found is that you need to have, obviously, the inherent ability and the discernment of what's good for your company and what's bad. But at the end of the day, also, a lot of what I do is networking. And we spend a lot of time doing that. And so I tell people, and I think we've chatted about this often, you know, the famous line is, I'll talk to anybody once. And the reason is that so many times I've seen in the ag space and ag adjacent, where I've taken a meeting and I'm like, what in the crap am I doing here? And then come to find out there's a nugget of information or something comes out where it's like, hey, I'm doing this, but maybe I've got this buddy that's doing this over here. And then you end up, you know, 6 weeks down the road in a phenomenal conversation with somebody that you would have never met if you just would have shrugged somebody off. So I try to give everybody time, but we spend, you know, time in industry. Like I mentioned too, a lot of us are also farmers. So like, I love nothing more than to ride around with our salespeople to learn what's going on. We spend time with the universities, understanding what they're doing. Oftentimes we get into arguments with them. I love my academic friends. They just don't move fast enough. We do spend times at, you know, conferences, a couple of them, but those are the ways that we network. Because if you look at Beck's Hybrids, you know, we also have a whole go-to-market strategy around a choices platform and offering farmers the most choices. I don't have to be the inventor of the technology. And a lot of people knock on our door because they want scale. And we go through a rigorous vetting process to make sure that your claims are real and it's really driving net farm income. But I'm looking for great partnerships and I'm looking for really good people that want to help me help our customers. And at the end of the day, I don't care if you're in ag, if you're not in ag, if you're a startup, if you're a grad student, or you're, you know, if you're on the downside of your career there. So,
yeah, I think that brings up an interesting question. I mean, you said, you know, it doesn't have to be invented by you. And, you know, that brings up a question on, you know, people talk about invention, innovation, research. Are these things different? Sometimes we often conflate the, you know, these words, but it looks like they are slightly different when you think about, it doesn't matter which field it is. What are your thoughts on that? Like, for example, you know, if you think about the whole Haber-Bosch process, you know, Haber was the one who invented it, but Bosch was the one who scaled it, commercialized it, figured out how to do that scale, right? So that's an example that comes to my mind. What are your thoughts on that?
So I'll just give you an example that we're working through right now. You know, so at Beck's Hybrids, we have our own corn breeding program here, but we also sell products from our publicly traded friends. You know, so as I always say, being a breeder at Beck's is the hardest job because you're not only competing against your colleagues, you're also competing against industry there. So one of the things that we are getting a lot of inbound on right now is, you know, DNA editing. At Beck's, I don't care necessarily about the exact technology. I don't care about how you snip, you know, erase, edit, slam together. I don't care that. What we're interested in is what have you found and discovered that now can be put into genetics. So I spend some time with folks that are like, hey, what could we do to help you discover? And I'm like, no, I'm not in that, you know, raw research realm. We're in the really pre-commercial realm. But if you've got a trait that's ready to go and that you think it's impactful, then let's sit down and have a conversation and look at some testing stuff there. So,
yeah, yes. No, that makes sense. I mean, this is a nice segue into my next question and something you referred earlier. It looks like you license a lot of your germplasm and genetics and traits from other companies, and you do your own breeding as well. And then you also mentioned that you are a value-added product provider, right? Could you talk about two things? One, if you are licensing technology from other folks, how do you compete and how do you differentiate yourselves? And what are those additional value additions that you're doing, which helps you do that and maybe charge a higher price, as you mentioned? You're not the cheapest product out there.
Yeah, great question. So first on the product side, you know, as a regional company, we're selecting products for smaller regions. So, you know, some of our competitor friends that we license products through, you know, are looking at wide swaths of geography, and they're obviously optimizing their efficiency and trying to get the most bags that work on the most acres at one time. But that also means that there's products that fit smaller regions. So for example, there might be a product that works really well in Kentucky that, you know, does not make the top two or three from a company that's trying to sell from Iowa to Ohio. Well, we can license that, bag it in smaller units, and sell it in Kentucky and actually beat them in those trials. So by having smaller selection zones is how we do that. Having those supplier relations is good for us. It's also good for them, right? Because we're also then representing that product. And also, especially when you look at traits, if the average farmer is buying from 2.3 or 2.8 companies, you know, if you're buying it through Bex and we're helping to source that for you, then you can trade different trait platforms and have the choice. So if you want to change your herbicide program, you don't have to start a whole nother relationship with another seed company there. There's also ebbs and flows in breeding programs. You know, there's cycles in breeding, just like there's cycles in the ag equipment space. And so as those cycles come and go, Sonny tells us all the time, we're going to sell whoever has the hot hand, right? And there's going to be ups and there's going to be downs. And so that allows us to, again, bring the best product to the market. Now, on the value add side, there's six value adds. And now you're going to test my memory here to make sure that I can remember them all off the top of my head. But the six things that you get in a bag of corn, soybeans, and wheat is going to be, first of all, is our replant program. Our company was founded on this. If anything happens to that seed, whether it was your fault or not, we will replace that seed, including trait and genetic fees. The second thing is all of our seed comes treated with our Escalate seed treatment. You know, we have years and years of data that shows that that will bring value, and that treatment helps that seed get up early and, you know, get some vigor on it. The other thing is we have a trip program. So if you want to sit on the beach somewhere warm in the wintertime, we can definitely help you do that. We also have our practical farm research. You know, we have 10 to 12 locations and over 2,000 acres of research that's being done by Bex people on Bex ground that has nothing to do with hybrids. It has everything to do with agronomy and how can I show our customers what products and practices are going to make them money. It's everything from a couple biologicals to things like how do I handle a 2x2x2 in furrow system to what closing wheel is on my planter. We found out 2 years ago, one of my favorite studies is what time of day you spray fungicide actually is very important for the efficacy of it. So we do all of that. We have our farm server application. So all of our customers get, you know, our FMIS system that is our own proprietary software built from the ground up, hosted in our own data center. So they get access to that. And then finally, they get access to our commitment rewards program, where if you give us 3 years of business, then we will get you a high value capital item that can make a difference on your farm right now and can build value into your farm. So I often describe to people, those are six tools in a toolbox. So our salespeople, when they are talking with a prospect or a customer, they're asking questions about how can I build value into your farm? And they're trying to see which one of those six are attractive to a customer. Not every customer likes all six of those, but we also know that all six of those do bring value. And so as you're talking with them, we're trying to figure out which ones are going to make the biggest impact on their farm.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people like the beach vacation thing in the sun.
Well, hey, we can talk about an order here really, really shortly. So I would love to get you and your wife on a trip.
You mentioned a couple of things which I want to maybe dig in a little bit more, right? So one, I think what you said, and I want to make sure I understood this correctly, is with the structure that you and the programs that you have in place, you basically can get to products which work in specific contexts, right? It doesn't have to be a product which has been designed to work across the board, but then it doesn't work very well for my farm or my weather conditions or my soil conditions. So I think it almost sounds like customization. Maybe that's not the right word, but good targeting of products. And you guys seem to do a good job at that. And similarly with the six value adds, I can pick and choose and self-select myself into which ones work for me. So do you do mostly that on the seed side, or do you look at other products as well? Because you mentioned, even though you mostly sell seed from a company standpoint and in associate services with it, Do you do anything beyond seed when it comes to finding the right product for the right context?
Yeah. So, you know, our Practical Farm Research, we provide that for free to anybody. Actually, it's available on our website. We print, I don't know, 40 or 50,000 of these books that come out. As I tell people, they're on the back of most farm shop toilets, and our competitors run around with them jammed in their glove box. Those products that are in Practical Farm Research, we don't sell. And so one of the things that has gained a lot of credibility with PFR is that the rules to participate in PFR, if you're an input provider, is that you give us the product for free. And then two, we publish the data. You get to see it with everybody else. But that's not for everybody. So there's some startups that come to us and are like, we really want in PFR. I'm like, no, you don't. There's too much risk right now. So you have to give it to us for free because we want to remain independent. We don't want people to even get a slightest inclination that we're being compensated for it. And then we publish the data with everybody else so that there's no massaging or, again, there's no impropriety in it. But a lot of farmers like that research because it's things like if you're a no-till farmer, you're going to instantly go to the no-till part, right? And see, okay, what are the technologies that Bex is seeing that's driving ROI? We take all of it to ROI, not necessarily yield. So, you know, you can have positive yield bump and lose money. If the cost of the practice outweighs the benefit, then that's a problem. There's not a lot of people out there doing that. And so, for example, you know, I advise farmers if they have a salesman that show up and they're like, hey, my product gives, you know, a 2 to 4 bushel bump. Okay, well, it should pay for itself at least 3 times over if you're going to run that on your farm. So all of our PFR stuff, those are some of the rules there, but we don't actually represent that. The only other thing I think that maybe gets into that realm, you know, on our farm server application, what we've tried to do over the last, I don't know, 10 or 12 years that we've had the application is focus on what we're good at, which is seed and the selection of seed, the placement and management of it, but then partner with best in breed on everything else. So there are things, you know, we partner with a couple different drone companies that have some buy-up options, but you go buy it from them. You don't buy it from us. We also integrate with some soil testing providers so that we can bring that data in. But again, you can go buy it from them. We're just going to exchange data. So we've tried to really be good in the seed side and then partner on everything else. So there's been a lot of discussion in the industry. As you know, farmers paying directly for digital ag services is a real challenge. And so that's why we've kept it as a value add, is that we can deliver that experience extremely, you know, cost effectively. And then through the partnering thing, we're not relying on any of that income to pay our bills, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You don't do pay for play for the practical farm research, field research, sorry.
Now that excludes us from some products in full transparency, right? There's some things that we want to test that we're like, this is really cool. And they're like, yeah, we're too early. Like, you know, there's a lot of startups out there eating ramen noodles and they're like, we need a little bit of cash, right? So we do a couple things, but it's not in the PFR book. You know, they're called PFR learning projects where we'll learn and we'll maybe do a small POC there. But there are some groups that come in and go, you know, if things go well, it can be very positive. If things go bad, it goes really bad. So for some people, that's just way too much risk.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to draw a parallel between what happens more on the digital side. You are basically open sourcing trial information for people to get access to with the practical PFR guide. And you're open about it. You say, what are the products in there? Here are the results. Here are the context in which those tests were performed. And you publish that for free to people. That almost sounds like open source.
Yeah, a little bit. I would say the other thing that we did, I think it was 2 years ago, we've also now been integrating that data into our farm server application. So the book and the guide are great, but it can also be overwhelming to look at a 350-page book, you know, that comes out in November and December. And then when you're trying to set your planter up in March, you forget about the starter fertilizer study or the planter closing wheel. So what we've done is we've let people opt into it within Farm Server. But if you opt into the PFR recommendations, we look at your growth stage modeling. And then 2 weeks before, we see what we call a PFR proven practice, which is a practice that has shown positive ROI for 3 years. Then we'll just send you a little blurb. And it's either via email or text message, depending on your preference. And just say like, hey, you're coming up on R4 in soybeans. You know, here's the data for your region that we've seen that you can take advantage of that's going to draw X amount of potential ROI if you look at this in the next 2 weeks. And so, you know, we've tried to bring that data from just being a PDF that sits in a book to how can we gently remind people that, hey, this is applicable to you in the next couple of weeks. And so things like that are additional value that our Farm Server team is providing. One of the really cool things that our Farm Server team is just launching right now is called Ready to Plant. We know that there are times that farmers are slow to get started planting, and then they don't stop soon enough. And so, you know, as soil temps come up, it's really about looking at the next 3 days of forecasting. And, you know, our practical farm research data has shown the earlier, the better, especially on soybeans. And so we have an opt-in service now that we'll send you a note and say, hey, in the next 24 hours, we think these fields are going to be fit to plant. And vice versa, you can be out planting on a Friday and the sun is shining, putting in a bunch of acres and not know that in 2 days, we're going to get 3 inches of rain and the temperature is going to drop. So we also tell them, hey, the forecast doesn't look good, even though the sun's shining and it looks beautiful, you should maybe stop planting. So things like that are things that really we're working on. How do we help people manage and how do we bring together this data and make that real time to all of our growers? Because 350 pages is great, but honestly, it's going to be about tailoring that to an individual farmer's operation, how they farm, how they want to farm, and how we can help them drive net farm income on their specific operation.
You know, a couple of months back, we had talked about your ChatGPT/LLM project, and you referenced that earlier, that how you have a 350 or 400-page PFR manual, and it's difficult to know where your thing is if it's a physical copy. Could you give an update on what you're doing there and what you're experimenting with and what have you found so far?
Yeah, so I'll just tease you with this. I would say that the chat models are making amazing leaps in the technology that's available to them. It seems like once you get one of the versions the way that you want it, they're coming out with the next one, right? So some of this stuff that's going on, no matter which one, the jumps in technology are absolutely staggering. And so there's some really neat stuff that's going on there. The key to this is that the technology is fun. The challenge is how do you integrate this in a customer-focused way first. And so, you know, here at Bex, our philosophy, and I think we might have talked about this, is how do I enable tech to have awesome collisions with our employees? And so I think the continued discussions internally are, we just don't want to put like a chat thing in the bottom of the corner and be like, hey, you know, it almost reminds me, I'm going to show my age here, of like Clippy, right? It's like, hey, here's Clippy, like, tell me what you want to do. And that's not what we want to do. And so it continues to be a discussion around what's the right way to implement this so that it's not all like innovation theater and hype, like, look at this LLM, you know, it's not that, but it's how can we make an impact with it and be super useful, but not be gimmicky. But it is absolutely staggering the progress that these companies are making in some of these models.
I think one thing I want to ask you is, you know, when you think about how the industry has fared in taking innovation or research to market, you know, you can debate whether it's done a good job or a bad job, but what are some of the learnings that you have from your work at Bex that you think the ag tech industry at large can learn from, or the agriculture industry, doesn't have to be tech? I mean, you mentioned like ideas are a dime a dozen, it's a person, it is about ROI. I think given this is the Future of Agriculture podcast, I think people would really appreciate if you have any thoughts there in terms of.
So it's funny that you mentioned this. I was having a conversation with some folks just a couple of days ago. Because I'm involved in agriculture, I've worked for an ag company, you know, our family farms, I run a couple hogs. Like, we take for granted often the built-in information that we have about like how income works, how risk works. So I spend some times with some startups talking about like most of them have this hockey stick of customer adoption that is the stupidest thing you ever seen. And it's like, guys, this is not like try it once and then you have 100% customer adoption in year two. You know, what is it? Most farmers will plant 50 crops in their lifetime. And so that's not very many iteration cycles. So most of the time we are talking about their customer adoption, we're talking about, do they really know the ROI that they're driving on farm in real dollars, not funny makeup dollars? Like, farmers do value their time, but they will easily give up their time to make up more money. So it can't be something like, well, we're going to make them more efficient. I'm like, no, that doesn't work. What are the dollars that you are actually driving? The hockey stick annoys the snot out of me. The other thing I think is the channel at which they come to market. Now, we're biased, okay? I mean, the farmer dealer network has been very good to us. It's no secret. It's a huge part of our growth because people buy from people at the end of the day. And so talking about the channel, I'm not going to tell you there's a right or wrong way to do it because there's a lot of other ways to do it that people have been successful at it. But understanding that channel is very, very important. And so if I talk to somebody and they're like, oh, well, we're going to sell this direct to farmers and I'm going to hire a bunch of salespeople. I'm like, okay, you're going to bleed cash for like 10 years. Can you do that? Well, no. Oh, we'll make a website and people will come to our website. I'm like, farmers aren't going through the internet looking for products to buy on their farm, with maybe the exception of like the cool grease gun gadget or, you know, some new drill bit tool or something like that. Those are often the things that are really annoying. The other thing is, like, I don't think they realize at times, like, farmers take their entire annual income at one time. And sometimes I think some people lose perspective on that. And so, like, you're asking them to put that at risk. So if they don't understand your product, they don't understand the market, like, you're asking them to put their entire annual income. So if I asked you right now to do something brand new and it's going to affect the one paycheck you get per year, would you be skeptical? So oftentimes, a lot of it is coaching around, you got to put yourself in the customer's shoes, and they don't often understand. They think that this is transactional. Oh my word, ag is anything but transactional. So anyway, those are some of my thoughts that kind of really annoy me. You know, this whole regenerative agriculture thing is one that we, you know, spend a lot of time arguing in the office about how this is going to go, and arguing with friends and VCs and startup folks. And the conversations that I like aren't, here's what farmers have to do. It's like, you need to understand what they're doing. And then it's through, I think, partnerships and putting together these integrated solutions for farmers to make it really easy. A lot of folks say, you got to make it really easy for the customer to say yes and really hard for them to say no. So anyway, that's how I kind of view it. And I think the future is through partnerships, and it's going to be building those holistic solutions. Now, it might also mean that there's not as many ag tech companies out there, to be really honest. And we're going through that right now. There's belt tightening in the capital markets, which I know that it can be a challenge for those in the startup industry to hear this. But, like, you know, if you don't have a good value prop and you're not delivering value, then this is just the inevitable, right? And so the industry probably needs a little bit of belt tightening to make sure that you are delivering direct farm value and you're just not blowing smoke.
Yeah, I think given the hockey stick discussion, that is what, you know, venture type of capital looks for. So do you think, like, what are the right sources of or ways to finance? Because innovation doesn't come for free, right? Somebody has to spend their time and resources to do that. So what are the right ways to fund innovation? One process is what you're following, right? But then these startups are still having to raise money, or somebody has to spend the time and the effort and the resources to try different ideas. And some of them will work and some of them won't. I mean, that's the whole nature of innovation. We learn through trial and error. Do you have any thoughts on the financing mechanism for innovation within agriculture, and what are some options out there which might work better?
Yeah, so at Bex Hybrids, we don't operate a fund and we don't do direct investment. When I first took this role, I thought it would be a handicap, and I found out it's actually amazing, because what happened was I was able to build some great relationships with a number of the VCs out there. And what I found is that some of the same problems that the startups are struggling with, the VCs have the exact same struggle. And it's, how do we know what's really making an impact? What's real? You know, which hockey sticks are real and which ones are fake? So what I have found is that most of the time, if I'm working with a company and we're finding that, you know, it's really, really awesome and they're raising money, that I can make a couple phone calls and kind of vouch for them and say, hey, here's a company that we think is doing something really interesting. I'm maybe too honest at times and have too many opinions. I also tell the VCs what I think is not, you know, awesome, but, you know, through the biased lens of an independent family owned seed company. And so through those relationships, what we found previously is what the VCs have some dry powder, but there wasn't enough investable companies out there. And so that has worked for the last couple of years for us. So if you need capital and we knew you, we keep a big Monday.com board like everybody else does. And here's everybody that we know that's early stage, mid stage, late stage, PE. And, you know, we'll make some phone calls if we think that what you're doing is actually helping farmers and driving net farm income. Now, what has been really interesting to me, though, is that I think in the last couple of months, as I've been chatting with some folks, I think that the ag banks are starting to wake up to this. And so what I mean by that is that let's say that you're in early stage, Series A, Series B, you've got customer traction, you've got income, you're on a path to profitability in the next 3 to 4 years, which is three crop cycles. I think that there are ag banks now that are willing to take a look at those deals that previously wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole. That to me is interesting. Now, I'm not telling you that they're out there writing checks left and right, but I've been very happy with how the traditional ag banks now, if there's a path to profitability and maybe there's a path to, you know, co-finance something, I hear that they're actually looking at deals. So that to me is interesting of pure debt financing. And I'm not a finance guy. I'm a recovering IT guy. And most of the time my finance people keep me as far away as they can. So I think that while venture, you know, definitely is that 10-year money, if you need 3 to 4 year money, now there are some options out there that we haven't previously seen. One of the other really interesting things, though, that I've seen out there, you know, a lot of us here at BEX are Purdue folks. I've been very intrigued by the partnership that Purdue University and their Dial initiative and High Alpha Innovation have done in a startup studio. And it's been really interesting to see them. They've been working at it for a year and a half. They've got three startup companies. They're basically running a company, you know, every 6 months. And what has been amazing is that all three of them are ideas that when you hear them, you're like, why didn't I not think of that? And so they're starting with problems and then having 6 or 8 major problem themes and then getting down to one. And so that is more of a, like, I have an idea, and that the startup studio model to me is interesting because basically when that company starts, they've got their initial seed funding. They have, you know, customer traction. They either have an MVP or they're quickly doing it and they're ramping that up. That to me is very interesting when you're looking at shorter capital cycles. And what they're doing with that program, if you've not checked it out, again, has been really, really, really cool. Solving problems in H2A, farm management, lease. And then the latest one is farmers that can build social media content for big food companies and get paid for it. So, you know, things like that that are really, really neat. I don't know if that answers your question, but those are some of the things that we see. And again, I don't invest, I don't give financial advice. So,
yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying is the basics don't change. You have to create some value for your customer and be able to capture some of that value. If you can do that and prove that and do it consistently, then things open up for you, right?
Yep. Amen. Yeah. Definitely.
I mean, you know, maybe switch gears a little bit here. I want to get your perspective on what are some of the major themes that you're seeing right now that you're excited about? And if you can opine on what are the things that you are not so excited about?
Oh, gosh. Well, what gets me really excited lately, and our team here internally is probably sick and tired of me saying it, but in-field automation and robotics to me is really, really cool. And not just cool, but making a big impact. You know, as I mentioned here at BEX, we also grow the majority of the seed corn that we sell. Well, there's only a couple of us that grow seed corn anymore, and there's not a lot of innovations happening in the hardware space. We still rely on quite a bit of labor to help with detasseling and pollination and deroguing. And I've explained to a lot of my friends that seed corn's like a dairy calf. It does everything it can to try to kill itself in the first month of its life. So it's a highly managed, you know, high cost product. And some of this in-field robotics and automation stuff is just phenomenal. So we have spent some time on the West Coast with some of our friends in vegetables, fruits, and nuts, because they can get, you know, almost three crops a year, and their innovation cycle can move a lot faster than ours can. And so I'm really excited about some of those technologies that are making an impact there on 250,000 acres. The conversation then is we look for those that are floating to the top and that are really doing impactful things. And then you have a conversation with, hey, I'm from Indiana. How could I get my customers access to this technology? As they look to scale their business, they're going to have to show a path to row crop in order to continue working there. So I would say that we're not as excited maybe about electrification, but some of the technology that we see that can run 24 hours a day unassisted or relatively light assisted in the field is really, really interesting. But the value prop, if I could jump on a soapbox here for a second, like we could talk about things like new data collection, sensors, like all this cool stuff. None of that actually matters when we're trying to get that technology in first. I have to be replacing something that is being done now and show real value in the field first before we can have any other conversation around what those secondary things are. So that to me is really, really exciting. I would say that we're also spending some time looking at how do the economics change? So let's just talk about spraying for a second. You know, we're used to loading up a 120-foot high boy sprayer with 1,200 gallons of product and going out and having some fun, right? And it's about how many acres a day. But when you start talking about autonomy and robotics, now it's how do I leave a sprayer in a field and it runs by itself? We don't quite understand, I think, all the economics around that. And so we're spending some time doing that this year in a number of our projects. I would say the other thing that is very, very interesting and, you know, has a tad bit of political stuff tied to it, but is the biofuel market. It's of no surprise we're going to be crushing a lot more soybeans here in the United States. You know, SAF is definitely something that's taking off in the RD side too. So, you know, how do we build programs or look for opportunities that we can provide to our customers to take some advantages there as those markets are looking at how do they scale? So those are the two things right now that are really, really interesting. As I mentioned, some of the electrification stuff I would say is not as important because we're trying to cover just so many acres here in row crop. So our friends on the West Coast, you know, definitely are worried about quality and how can I do a couple acres here? It's like, well, I still want that same quality, but now I need to go on millions of acres and I need to do it a lot faster in a shorter period of a time. So those are the things to me that are really exciting. I would say the other project that we're running that is super duper exciting, and I think some of our marketing folks put out something on it here recently too, is that our research team is doing some really interesting stuff around roots and looking at root phenotyping, which is one of those things that everybody in the industry will tell you is important. So we've been working with some different university folks. We've been chatting with some folks at the Danforth Center around root phenotyping. And most of the time we dig up this, you know, little root ball and wash it off and spend time there. We've done some grow out boxes that have a corn root as, you know, a 5 foot by 5 foot by 5 foot box. And you can see huge differences from different genetic sets and different phenotypic attributes there. And so we're definitely, we have more questions than we do answers. But the whole idea that we have sensors, we have all kinds of sensors to look at what happens above ground. We don't have a lot of sensors that tell you what happened underneath the ground. So we're doing some really cool work with a number of companies that are doing some ground penetrating radar work and a lot of people that have a lot of claims. But I think it's going to be super interesting as, you know, we look into the next couple of years of how does root and new, because that all feeds into nutrient management. You know, does your corn stand up straight? Does it lodge? And so there's some exciting stuff happening there. So that's what I can talk about. How's that?
Well, that is probably as good of a place as any to wrap up today's episode. Thank you so much to Brad Fruth for being on the show. Thank you, of course, to Rishi for hosting. And as I said at the top of the show, I just really appreciate this grounded, practical perspective that is also still on the cutting edge of bringing technology to this industry. I'm curious, Rishi, from your perspective, what are your top takeaways from this conversation you had with Brad?
I think a couple of things. One, which I was not very aware of, is all the different value-added services that Bex Hybrids provides, and Brad ran through a list of 6 of them. And so it's a combination of product plus all these value-added services. Almost reminded me of Best Buy. You know, you can go online on Amazon or wherever and buy a TV for a low price or whatever, But if you go to Best Buy, you can buy the same product, maybe at a slightly higher price, but you get a whole bunch of, you know-how, installation services, a bunch of different things. And that's why Best Buy has done well over the last couple of years. So that was one parallel that I thought about. I think the field research that Bex publishes, I think, is pretty interesting. And it was interesting to hear how much effort they take to make sure they are independent in those evaluations and are providing unbiased opinion on different products and options, and even products that they don't sell. You know, some equipment settings, which, I mean, they don't sell equipment, they sell mostly seed, but they're willing to run those experiments because they want to make sure that growers know how to get the most ROI from their investments in different products and services. So I think that was very interesting. And then the third thing is their approach on how to deal with new technology and innovation and how to test them and how to bring them to market. I think they were very clear on it has to have ROI in the near to midterm for it to be interesting for them. And I think I like their open approach. They're willing to talk to any number of people and spend the time to know how people are thinking, why they are passionate about a particular idea. And that was quite encouraging because I think all of us need to follow that type of an approach where we're willing to have conversations with different people and learn from each other because the problems we are trying to work on are very difficult and we need multiple perspectives.
Definitely. Well, thanks again, Rishi. Really appreciate this.
Yeah, thank you, team, for again giving me this chance.
Well, that's going to do it for today. Thank you again to Rishi and to Brad, and thank you to our quarterly presenting sponsor, which is Headstorm. And last but never least, thank you for your time and your attention. I do not take it lightly. I'll be back next week with another story of Ag Innovation.